from KQED.
Well, good afternoon, everybody. Now that those of us on the campaign trail have had a chance to get a little sleep, it's time to get back to work, and there is plenty of work to do. As I said on Tuesday night, the American people voted for action, not politics as usual. You elected us to focus on your jobs, not ours. And in that spirit, I've invited leaders of both parties to the White House next week so we can start to build consensus around the challenges that we can only solve together. And I also intend to bring in business and labor and civic leaders from all across the country here to Washington to get their ideas and input as well. You know, at a time when our economy is still recovering from the Great Recession, our top priority has to be jobs and growth. That's the focus of the plan that I talked about during the campaign. It's a plan to reward small businesses and manufacturers that create jobs here, not overseas. It's a plan to give people the chance to get the education and training that businesses are looking for right now. It's a plan to make sure this country is a global leader in research and technology and clean energy, which will attract new companies and high-wage jobs to America. It's a plan to put folks back to work, including our veterans, rebuilding our roads and our bridges and other infrastructure. And it's a plan to reduce our deficit in a balanced and responsible way. Now, our work is made that much more urgent because at the end of this year, we face a series of deadlines that require us to make major decisions about how to pay our deficit down. Decisions that will have a huge impact on the economy and the middle class, both now and in the future. Last year, I worked with Democrats and Republicans to cut $1 trillion worth of spending that we just couldn't afford. I intend to work with both parties to do more, and that includes making reforms that will bring down the cost of health care so we can strengthen programs like Medicaid and Medicare for the long haul. But, as I've said before, we can't just cut our way to prosperity. If we're serious about reducing the deficit, we have to combine spending cuts with revenue. And that means asking the wealthiest Americans to pay a little more in taxes. That's how we did it. That's how we did it in the 1990s when Bill Clinton was president. That's how we can reduce the deficit while still making the investments we need to build a strong middle class and a strong economy. That's the only way we can still afford to train our workers or help our kids pay for college or make sure that good jobs in clean energy or high-tech manufacturing don't end up in countries like China. Now, already I've put forward a detailed plan that allows us to make these investments while reducing our deficit by $4 trillion over the next decade. I want to be clear, I'm not wedded to every detail of my plan. I'm open to compromise. I'm open to new ideas. I'm committed to solving our fiscal challenges. But I refuse to accept any approach that isn't balanced. I am not going to ask students and seniors and middle-class families to pay down the entire deficit while people like me making over $250,000 aren't asked to pay a dime more in taxes. I'm not going to do that. And I just want to point out, this was a central question during the election. It was debated over and over again. And on Tuesday night, we found out that the majority of Americans agree with my approach. And that includes Democrats, independents, and a lot of Republicans across the country, as well as independent economists and budget experts. That's how you reduce the deficit, with a balanced approach. So our job now is to get a majority in Congress to reflect the will of the American people. And I believe we can get that majority. I was encouraged to hear Speaker Boehner agree that tax revenue has to be part of this equation. So I look forward to hearing his ideas when I see him next week. And let me make one final point that every American needs to hear. Right now, if Congress fails to come to an agreement on an overall deficit reduction package by the end of the year, everybody's taxes will automatically go up on January 1st. Everybody's, including the 98% of Americans who make less than $250,000 a year. And that makes no sense. It would be bad for the economy and would hit families that are already struggling to make ends meet. Now, fortunately, we shouldn't need long negotiations or drama to solve that part of the problem. While there may be disagreement in Congress over whether or not to raise taxes on folks making over $250,000 a year, nobody, not Republicans, not Democrats, want taxes to go up for folks making under $250,000 a year. So let's not wait. Even as we're negotiating a broader deficit reduction package, let's extend the middle class tax cuts right now. Let's do that right now. That one step would give millions of families, 98% of Americans, and 97% of small businesses, the certainty that they need going into the new year. It would immediately take a huge chunk of the economic uncertainty off the table, and that'll lead to new jobs and faster growth. Business will know that consumers, they're not going to see a big tax increase. They'll know that most small businesses won't see a tax increase. And so a lot of the uncertainty that you're reading about, that will be removed. In fact, the Senate has already passed a bill doing exactly this. So all we need is action from the House. And I've got the pen ready to sign the bill right away. I'm ready to do it. You know, the American people understand that we're going to have differences and disagreements in the months to come. They get that. But on Tuesday, they said loud and clear that they won't tolerate dysfunction. They won't tolerate politicians who view compromise as a dirty word. Not when so many Americans are still out of work. Not when so many families and small business owners are still struggling to pay the bills. What the American people are looking for is cooperation. They're looking for consensus. They're looking for common sense. Most of all, they want action. I intend to deliver for them in my second term, and I expect to find willing partners in both parties to make that happen. So let's get to work. Thank you very much, everybody. Thank you.
You've been listening to President Obama's statement from the East Room of the White House, his first since winning a surprisingly easy re-election Tuesday night. The president using about an 8-minute talk to lay out his thoughts about the so-called fiscal cliff and how to avoid it, calling for action and cooperation. He said that he had invited the leaders of both parties to the White House next week and is hoping to have business and labor join them and build some kind of a consensus. I'm Scott Schaefer, and joining me to talk about the president's remarks here on Forum for the rest of this half hour is Peter Coy, economics editor for Bloomberg Businessweek. Peter, good to have you with us.
Thanks for having me on. Interesting, huh?
Yeah, well, he sounded conciliatory but firm is how I would describe it. He did win, as he said, on a platform of higher taxes for the wealthy. He seems very still insistent on that. What was your take on the president's remarks and how it might be received, for example, in the business community?
Well, a couple points I was watching for is to see how he would respond to Boehner's overture. The House Speaker, of course, said yesterday that he was open to revenue increases as part of a package, not just on their own, but as part of a package that also would deal with entitlements and tax reform. And the president said he was gratified by that. So there's an opening there. The other thing that struck me is that the president said that he would like to see the middle class tax cut. That's the portion of the Bush tax cuts that apply to the middle class agreed to now, extend those now. So what he's trying to do there is drive a wedge between the Republicans and the voters, because he well knows that those middle-class tax cuts are very popular, and the Republicans' response is they don't want that wedge to be driven. They want to have everything considered as a package. So vote up and down on the middle-class tax cut and the 250,000-plus tax cuts together. So you can see the beginnings of an interesting contest over the next few months.
The Republicans, no doubt, concerned about losing their leverage on the tax cuts.
Right, they would lose a lot of leverage if they agreed to the middle-class tax cut. Then the upper bracket tax cuts are just hanging out there, very exposed. Not something they want.
Well, because we have just 10 minutes left in this discussion, I'm going to give out the phone number and invite our listeners to call in with their thoughts. 866-733-6786. 866-733-6786. You can also email us, forum@kqed.org, or leave your comments on the forum Facebook page. Peter Coy, the business community has an interest, of course, as the rest of the country does, Wall Street and others, on getting this resolved in a way that is not messy and that doesn't drag out.
Right. And, you know, it's already harming business investment. That's what people forget, is that businesses look ahead. So if they're worried that there will be problems with the economy in 2013, they will cut back on their hiring plans, their investment plans now in advance of that. And there is evidence that that's already begun to happen. So even before we go off that fiscal cliff, we are suffering the harm from its existence.
There was a report out, I believe, yesterday from the Congressional Budget Office saying, among other things, that increasing taxes on the wealthiest Americans, as the president wants to do, would not have an appreciable effect on growth. Do you think the business community, business leaders, Wall Street, is ready to accept that?
Remember that business people are not just people running corporations. They're people who think about their own bottom lines. And it's sometimes a little hard for, you know, it's understandable for them to differentiate between the two. So they'll tend to identify their personal interest with that of their companies. And so if their personal tax rates are going up, they see it as a bad thing for the economy as a whole.
Well, on the other hand, we're talking about raising their taxes to what they were during the Clinton administration and when they did very, very well.
Right. So that's the obviously that's the Obama line.
Well, it's more than the Obama line.
No. I happen to think that it's a fact that that's what would happen. And it's true, as you say, it's absolutely true that businesses did very well in the 90s. That was a boom time. So I have an article in Bloomberg Business this week about the outlook for the economy, and it kind of presumes that somehow we will get past this fiscal cliff in a way that is not too destructive. And assuming that does happen, the next few years look pretty good. Not great, but in comparison to the travails we've been through over the past 4 years, the next 4 years look like they will be we'll see continued declines in unemployment, continued growth, maybe in the range of 3% or so once we get past 2013. And, you know, how can you complain about that after having come through the worst economic downturn since the Great Depression?
But again, do you think business leaders, are they of a mind, and I realize that you can't paint them all with one brush, but, you know, will they go to their Republican friends and say, look, get this done, you know, reach across the aisle, compromise? Or
right.
Are they going to say hold out for extending the tax cuts for everyone?
Well, you're exactly right when you said that, you know, business does not speak with one voice. There is an emerging coalition that says revenue needs to be part of the equation, which to me is like people who are sort of in touch with reality, because it's very hard to make the numbers work only on the spending side. Then there are others who just say, out of ideology or just as a negotiating tactic, no revenue at all. I think what's most likely to happen is that there will be additional revenue. But as Boehner hinted, he's open to, it won't be through higher tax rates. It'll be through closing some of the loopholes, as they're called.
But is that really enough? I think Democrats, Chuck Schumer and others, are saying that's fine as far as it goes, but it really doesn't get us where we need to go.
Yeah. And it would depend on how far you went in getting rid of those loopholes. as they're called. By the way, I keep, you know, putting quotation marks around the word loopholes because some of them are actually pretty valuable. The R&D tax credit, the investment tax credit, these are things which actually boost growth. It would be a huge mistake in the effort to prevent any kind of tax increase to instead wipe out all deductions, good and bad alike.
Do you see the Simpson-Bowles plan, which the president sort of set aside to some criticism,
yeah.
Is that a good starting point for these discussions? I mean,
I think it is, just because it has the virtue of having been out there quite a while, having been created by a bipartisan group, even though it didn't get all the votes it needed to become official strategy. And it has a mixture of spending cuts and tax increases. So I think it's a great starting point.
The president also reiterated his call for investments, not just in technology and research, but also in infrastructure. That is something the Congress, the Republican Congress, has been reluctant to pass. Do you think that's just a bargaining chip, or do you think there's a real possibility for something like that coming out of a grand bargain?
It feels to me more like a bargaining chip at a time when it's going to be so hard to get the cuts that are required. To be adding any kind of spending would just make that goal even harder. So not that it's not a good idea, but I just feel like we're at the triage stage here, not the rightly or wrongly, not at the stage of, hey, thinking what's the best way to invest for the future.
That's Peter Coy. He's economics editor at Bloomberg Businessweek. He's written one of the cover stories for this week's issue, The Next 4 Years. And if you'd like to join us for the last few minutes, 866-733-6786. Let's go to Steve in San Francisco. Steve, hi.
Hi. I'm both a Republican and actually make more than $250,000 a year with my wife, and I still believe revenue needs to be raised. And I'm wondering why the president himself did not raise the fact that the only reason not to sign a bill keeping the tax benefits in place for those under $250,000 today was leverage. The commentators talk about it, but the president didn't, and I'm wondering why.
Well, Peter Coy, what are your thoughts? I mean, that's a sort of a political question, but not an economic one.
It is, but I'm going back. We have Bloomberg has a transcript of what he said, and I thought he actually did mention the word leverage in there somewhere. Looking back, but certainly that's where he's going with his thinking on it. He's said many times that he doesn't want a middle class tax cut to be held captive. by the people who were, as they say, the top 2%. So I think that was a message on the campaign trail, and it's something he feels strongly about. And I think he succeeded in getting the point across in the election, judging from the results.
All right, Steve, thanks for the call. Let's go now to San Jose. Tom is next. Good morning.
Good morning. Hi. Just wanted to point out, in line with what you were saying about the 1990s being a period of high growth and higher taxes than we have now, we can also look across the pond at other countries, such as Sweden, which is growing much faster than we are, much lower unemployment than we have, high taxes, very strong safety net, low fiscal deficits as well. That's also true of Holland and Canada now. So I think the discussion also needs to take into account the fact that there are other countries with much stronger safety nets, higher taxes, that are performing much better economically than we are.
Peter Coy, I'm not sure the president will be holding Europe up as an example, but...
but he could hold up the United States as an example. In the 1950s, when the economy was growing rapidly, the top marginal income tax rate was 91%.
Yes, that's right. We forget.
Not to say that we should have that now, but it just kind of like flies in the face of the argument that, you know, 35% is too high.
Yeah, well, what did Reagan reduce it to? 39 or 38 or something like that?
I forget the number, but yeah, so we are not at a high tax rate right now for the high incomes.
All right. Well, thanks very much for the call. A couple of quick emails here from Bob. Here we go again, wanting to pass tax cut extensions for the middle class right now without tax cut expiration for the rich. Obama's going to cave again. Another email to that extent, pointing that out as well. And then an email from Tom who says, we're not raising taxes, we're restoring taxes back to the Clinton era, a point that we made earlier.
Yeah.
And Peter, we're just about at the bottom of the hour. Very quickly, what is your hope for next week as the leaders get together at the White House? Or expectation, I shouldn't say hope.
Yeah, right. Expectation is that that they'll come up with a patch. They will come up with something that, so we don't feel a full bite of the fiscal cliff on January 1st, which will give the negotiators time to come up with a plan, which is going to be seen correctly as kicking the can down the road again.
All right. Well, we'll see. So we'll find out soon enough. Peter Coy, economics editor at Bloomberg Businessweek, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
And we've got more to come in this hour. Belva Davis, KQED's well-known anchor for This Week in Northern California, will be with us. Tonight is her final night anchoring that program. Stay with us.